Hello, hello, all of my beautiful freaking people. Welcome back to another episode of FML Talk. We are getting deep today, and we have a return guest. I'm really excited for this episode. So sit back, grab a cocktail, and welcome to FML Talk.
Oh my God.
Wait, how old was the other girl?
19. Can you believe that shit?
Hey, this is Gabrielle Stone.
Good book.
He did what?
48 hours?
What a dick.
Yeah, but have you seen all the photos on our Instagram?
And this is FML Talk.
Oh, no, she didn't.
Okay, do yourself a favor. And if you are a newer FMLer, or if you're an OG, one in the same, because this episode was so fucking long ago, scroll way back to an episode called Fuck Polyamory with Amanda Catherine, and go listen to that episode and then come back and listen to this episode, because she's back. And the difference in this human is fucking wild. She's been through some shit, and it's shit that unfortunately a lot of us resonate with. She has gone through a pretty difficult divorce after a decade-long marriage, and a lot of the revelations and the changes and the lessons she got that we are going to talk about on today's episode are very powerful, and I think a lot of you will resonate with. The reason why I want you to go listen to the first episode, apart from it being so fun and like we were just like laughing and it's like about wild polyamory, sex, threesomes, like all the things, it sounds like two different people in the best way. Like she has now really dropped into her body and let go of so much trauma and so much bullshit. And I am so proud to know her and have her back on as a repeat guest. She's so well spoken, and I always think that she has such poignant things to say. So, without further ado, here the fuck we go. Amanda, welcome back to FML Talk. I feel like I'm looking at an entirely different person than I was when we did our first episode.
Definitely a lot of like external life things have changed. I feel like I'm more me than ever, which is so funny. But I also in the same way, I'm like, oh, fuck. Yeah. So if people don't know me super well and they look at like what my life looked like when I was last on your pod versus now, they'd be like, you have gone through a 360. And I'm like, correct.
It's yes.
been a whirlwind. Yeah.
It's, you know, I feel like it's that rite of passage time that we all have to go through at like whatever age you're at. It's like the big shift that you go through. And it's life changing and it sucks and it rips your heart open and you're like, this is fucking bullshit. Being a human is hard. But on the other end of it, you're like, oh, I see why I needed to go through all of that. And yay for this new version of me that I now get to
step
into.
Yeah, I mean, I will say yes. And I feel like I had already had like two of those previous to this season of my life. And I'm just like really ready for like, I mean, I chose this change, right? I chose the shifts. So it's like all very much coming from this place of knowing. And also it was excruciatingly hard. And so I'm really ready for the ease to be just this like perpetual thing. I have no idea if that will ever come because life is both individually and collectively hard. And there's just so much stuff, right? And I feel everything in such a big way. So I'm like, I would like it to not be explosively hard.
Right.
And maybe we can like the rest of my 30s would be so delicious if we're just like chugging along at like a, you know, cozy six instead of like a three, you know?
I love it. I love it. Let's get to a cozy six. Okay. So take me and everybody listening back to kind of just like set the stage of the relationship that you were in the last time you were here. Obviously, we did your episode on like polyamory, which was still
polyamory.
Like,
yeah.
One of the most fascinating episodes. Like, I remember just my jaw being on the floor, being like, what? Wait, tell me more.
Yeah.
So, kind of take me back and like tell everybody like the relationship dynamic you were in then before you start kind of guiding us through this like world of a shitstorm that has taken place.
Yeah, for sure. So, we last chatted, I can't remember exactly when in the dynamic things were happening, but I was still married at the time and had been in that relationship. I mean, at the end of it, it was like 11, 12 years. So I think at that time it was like nine, maybe eight, nine that we'd been together. And for probably three or four of those years when I last chatted with you of our relationship, we had been polyamorous. And that was very much guided by both like the hearts that we had as individual humans and always had sort of had these values around what we didn't understand were like was like relationship anarchy, which we could absolutely get into more later, because I don't think we talked about that last time on the pod. But that was so always a part of my value system and a part of his value system too, that we connected on like the moment we met, but just never acted around it when it came to like sexual exclusivity. It was always like monogamy in that lens. And then, yeah, so that's where I was. And it came about because I came out as queer and I was like, I'm very bi and I love dick, but I also am so attracted to women and like all sorts of people. And I just never thought there would be an opportunity to like explore that piece because I was happily in a relationship and had been monogamous for so long. Right. And so that opened like a lot of dialogue. And so when we last chatted, like, I think we were talking a lot about threesomes, a lot about like the two triads I had been in, which was sort of my first foray into polyamory, which I definitely think of to that on the podcast, like, don't ever start this way or maybe ever do it. It's so hard. And it's also the most like represented in the media through the lens of polyamory and non-monogamy, which I think is so fascinating and interesting because it's like, this is not how most polyamorous people operate, but it's certainly how I got into which was interesting and unexpected, but it just sort of happened that way. And then, yeah, was just like living my queer polyamorous life at the time and very, very much married.
Would you say that you guys were in a healthy relationship? Like, because the way it was presented on the pod the last time you were on, like, I was like, oh, they have successfully been able to do this. Like, everyone's on the same page. They have such a healthy, open communication, which like, I know you have to have if you're going to like, you have to have if you're in a monogamous or not monogamous.
You have to have dynamic. Great communication skills, like, that period. In any healthy dynamic, correct. But yes. It is certainly, it's trickier. Like when you're involved in significant multiple relationships where you are choosing to, if it makes sense for your dynamics, like build lifetime commitments to, which is really what polyamory is centered around. You know, you're dealing with more than just one other person's needs, expectations, desires, changing perspectives, changing needs. So there is an inherent need for more communication as a result on all fronts, right? And yeah, I mean, in so many ways, you know, I said this since because newsflash, we are no longer together, that relationship. But and I went through a very rigorously hard divorce. But it was not because of polyamory. Polyamory is actually what probably maintained our relationship for 2 years longer than it would have. And so, yeah, we had such great communication skills that we were building and had built both like before entering polyamory and previously. And also, like, I knew that I had the capacity and always felt like I had the capacity to have lots of relationships. And really, even when I was sexually monogamous, I still was operating very much polyamorously because I had and continue to have these incredibly deep platonic loves that very much feel like and operate like partnerships, right? And so it wasn't really that big of a shift for me personally as an individual. I cannot speak for anyone else involved, but yeah, I mean, we certainly had stuff that was like, you know, when you meet when you're 19 and 22, respectfully, like you're going through life and you're learning things and you build patterns on a lot of insecurities, right? And a lot of individual traumas and stuff. So there were certainly stuff in our relationship. I mean, there's no such thing as a perfect relationship. I think that's complete bogus. But like, we were not realized humans when we first met. And so there was a lot of toxic behaviors that existed for sure in our dynamic. And then some of those patterns, despite an attempt to rectify, like did continue. And then some other stuff happened later on, right? So, but yeah, the last I saw you, like, I was very much in a relationship that at the time I would have been like, this is so healthy, so positive, so great.
I wish I could say I am a superwoman and on top of all that I do, cook every night, but that is simply not the case. Our time is so freaking limited now with the baby and my bonus daughter, and Factor Meals has been an absolute lifesaver for Tay and I. You get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can focus on the more important stuff you've got going on in your life. No prep, no mess, no cleanup, without sacrificing the flavor and the variety of eating at a restaurant. You can customize your meals weekly and get as much or as little as you need, as well as pause or reschedule deliveries to suit whatever your lifestyle is. Seriously, you guys, Factor meals are delicious. I talk about them all the time, and they have truly taken so much stress out of our lives. Head to factormeals.com/FMLTalk50 and use code FMLTalk50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code FMLTalk50 at factormeals.com/FMLTalk to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. If you ask Tay if he could only eat one thing for the rest of his life, the answer would be cereal. Full disclosure, I was first influenced by Miss Morgan Ouellette to try Magic Spoon cereal. So when I found out I was going to get to offer you guys a deal on it, I was so excited because it is so freaking good. Magic Spoon has zero sugar, so we can not only have it for breakfast, but late night snacks. And it's perfect for the kiddos to get them a healthy meal without the sugar crash. I love their variety pack. Four flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs per serving. Made with wholesome ingredients and no artificial flavors or dyes. Big yay. It is high in protein, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. Tay and my bonus daughter are cereal connoisseurs, and they are in love with Magic Spoon and cannot believe it's packed with as much goodness as it is. Go to grab a variety pack and try it today. I promise you guys will not be disappointed. And be sure to use our promo code at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Try a delicious bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/FMLTalk and use the code FMLTalk to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. So, okay, what was the turning point? Like, what? I know there's certain things that you can and can't say legally, yeah. But like, what was the turning point that happened? Because I remember, from an outside perspective, following you on social media and stuff, when that news kind of broke, I was like, oh shit. And then you sent me a DM and we were chatting. So I know that it was almost like a veil was lifted off your face, but like, what in your experience, what happened?
Yeah. I'm like, how do I say this without saying it? At the end of the day, there were 2 years in which we were sifting through some big shifts in terms of how we were relating to one another, what that looked like, and also significant mental health changes, which completely altered the dynamic of our relationship in a way that I think we both thought would be short term, but it wasn't. It was like, this is what it will be forever. And can you live with this? Mm. And ultimately, after being in couples counseling for a very, very long time, there were a couple of incidents that I will not talk about the specifics around, but there were a couple of very fucked up incidents that occurred that just like highlighted some repeated patterns that I was not wanting to participate in, that did not feel like the type of relationship and the type of dynamics that felt like love to me. Right? To many people, that might be fine. But for me, it was not. And I was very, very unwell, like very, very, very unwell. The last like 3 months of our relationship, I was in like full freeze state because I had been living in fight or flight for probably 2 years, like on and off. And because I'm so good at like, you probably resonate with this. Like, I'm like such a like, you do the shit, you keep going. You just like, right. And I've learned how to support myself somatically and like through the work that I do. And also just like by living, by just like processing, but also like not letting it take over my whole body. And so I don't know how I did it, but I successfully, but obviously unsuccessfully because I dropped really severely, but lived in fight or flight for 2 solid years. And I eventually ended up in like a deep freeze and I was terrified. It felt like I thought I was depressed. Like I didn't understand what was happening. I just knew that I was like comatose laying on my couch, like unable to function as a person and still trying to run my business, still like doing all sorts of things.
Can you explain for people listening, like what a deep freeze is?
Yeah. So somatically, there are sort of like when you're in a trauma response, it can present four different ways, right? So there's fight or flight, which I think we're the most aware of, right? Which is when you're in hyper arousal and you go out of your like tolerance space, right? It's called the window of tolerance in somatics. And fight or flight is, I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like. You're either like, you know, fighting for your life and it tends to be this very like up feeling. People can have like racing heartbeats. I mean, just all sorts of things exist in that space. And flight is when you're like, fuck no, I gotta go, like space, right? And it's usually quite viscerally reactive responses that are coming from a place of I'm triggered, I'm traumatized, right? Now, the opposite is when you're in hypoarousal, which is when your body goes into what often will present in people that looks like depression. Now, some people actually have depression, but other people are simply like in freeze or in fawn. Fawn is where people pleasers exist a lot, which is where I was for almost all of my 20s. It's like, this is how I will move through this, is I will do what you want. I will meet your needs. I will not even think about myself, you know, when there's something trauma related. It's like, take my needs out of the picture. I will just do everything that you need and be like, I will save you, you know? Freeze is the other side of that coin. And it's really where our bodies just like cannot even begin to respond. We start to shut down a lot of the time. We cannot even say, like, or if someone is yelling at us or someone is saying that they need something, like, it's almost like your body physically can't even, there's nothing to give. And so it just shuts. And it presents differently depending on obviously what your body looks like. For me, it was like I was still cognitively there, but my body, it was like my body wasn't connected to my brain, is what it felt like. And so I was like, I know this is bad, but I can't talk about why. And I have no ability to say anything to anybody. I was just like, I was responding in very much just like nods. I was often like feeling like it felt kind of like I was in like what I always imagined, like if I were to be institutionalized at any point, like this is probably where I would be, you know? It was terrifying. And I was like that for a few months. And then I went to Costa Rica on a trip that was supposed to be a trip for the two of us that we had booked as like we're always really good on a trip. Let's find a way to heal. He decided not to come on that trip. And I was like, fuck it. I'm going by myself. And very last minute, my parents were like, something's wrong. You're not talking to us. And that's unusual. Do you want us to come? And I was like, if you want to, fine. But like, I'm going. And they ended up coming, which was the best thing that could have ever happened to me because I hadn't been telling them what was happening. Right. And I'm very, very close with my family. And I just felt like very stuck, very isolated. And and I told them everything. I like everything. And I felt myself come back online. Mm. Like my mom looked me in the eyes probably like 2 or 3 days into the trip. And she's like, this is the first time I've seen light behind your eyes in 2 years.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah.
And so when you say that you weren't able to talk to anyone and you couldn't talk to anyone, was that a choice? Was that someone making you feel like you couldn't share things that were going on?
It was a combination of things. I definitely operated in a very protective way. Two of my friends, my close people, had been like on the receiving end of the ins and outs of things. So they knew to a degree what was happening. But like I had left many things out because I felt like I needed to protect him.
Right.
And I felt like if I told everybody everything, that all of my friends would be coming and dragging me away and being like, never, ever will you be here again. And I was not personally ready to face that and to like say goodbye. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a piece of that. I think there were some unintentional ways of like closing me off to others that was rough and not great as well.
Yeah. we're going to be dancing around some stuff in this episode. And I
yeah, we are like, dancing.
I want to like fully respect that.
No, I appreciate
it. So if we ever get to something that you're not comfortable with, please be like, Gabrielle, like, let's make a hard right.
Oh, you know, I will. You know, I will.
But I'm curious, like, what is the intent that you have as Amanda of wanting to not speak on certain things? Is it in protection of him? Is there like a legal aspect of it? Like, why do you feel like there's stuff you can't say?
As protecting myself. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's protecting myself. There was a lot of unfortunate, the divorce process took 2 years. It should have never done that. So if that just gives like anyone an insight into the hard end of the last 4 years of my life, really. And so as a result, I chose to make some agreements that I think are complete bogus, but ultimately it's like, I need to protect myself moving forward. And I spend a lot of years not doing that in other ways. And I'm never fucking again. So like, this is the most empowering thing I can do. And I have actively chosen to do this. And also truly also from like a lens of my core values, I do not believe in like putting people on blast in a way that's going to like bring awareness. You know, I believe people have the potential to change and like heal. And I think that cancel culture can be really fucked up in many ways and like create a very, you know, it's like someone who's already in pain and hurting and going through so much emotional damage and trauma. Like, yes, like, or if we're talking broadly, like abusers are going to be abusers, but not necessarily forever. And like, they have the potential to heal. And, you know, and I really do believe in that. I believe in the core of people and in the good in people, like probably sometimes to my own detriment. And also I think it's what makes me me, and it's what makes me as an artist and a writer and all the things like, so unapologetically real and like myself and bright. And I just don't believe in like, no matter how someone has harmed me or how angry I am about something, like I just can't imagine sitting and being like, well, let me tell you about all of the X, you know, for me, it's just not my way and path to healing. And so that's also was a part of the decision making factor on that, which I, you know, I've said to him like many, many times, I was like, I will never speak about you in a way that is like
detrimental,
you know? Yeah, detrimental to you. And like, maybe he might perceive something I say as detrimental, but like, I don't think I've ever done that. And I've been very, very, you know, cognizant to hold like when I'm angry or when I'm sifting through like deep stuff, like that happens in therapy and that happens with my close fucking friends and family, you know, it doesn't need to be anywhere else.
So let's talk about when all of this was, you know, happening and you were like, okay, I'm getting a divorce from this person that I've been with for quite a long time through very formative years. What did that initial like realization of, oh, this is happening? Like, what were some of the emotions that you felt in response to that?
Entire relief. Yeah, I left and I was just like, oh my God, thank you. Like, and I mean, I had been rectifying with the decision for probably a year and a half, having conversations around it, both in therapy and with him. I mean, like there were, it was just like pure physical relief. I sobbed in my car harder than I've ever sobbed, not out of grief, but out of motherfucking relief. It was like, finally, I can come up for air.
Yeah.
And I did. Like, I was like, I was breathing again. I mean, I wrote so much in the months after I left. I watched Twilight and all these like shitty movies that, you know, just brought me nostalgia. I was in places that really lit me up as a human and was just like really trying to be like, okay, yes, there's all of these things like structurally that you need to figure out. You need to like, you know, I had another dog. We had to separate the dogs. It was like, what are, you know, what is happening now? Like, how do we separate a life that's been intertwined for 10 years and all of these things. But I was like, fucking, I'm living now. Like, it was true. Like, I'm alive. And there were certainly and have continued to be, as I've shared quite honestly on my like, you know, TikTok and on Instagram and my podcast as well, like what those grief waves have looked like and some unexpected things that came up, you know, throughout the time, because it certainly is not, I mean, it's not going to go away, I don't think, anytime soon, because I just live in the grief with the people that I've loved and lost. They will always like be in my sphere and in my body in some way. But yeah, it was mostly and has continued to be mostly relief.
Yeah. I remember when I drove away from my ex-husband, getting the papers handed to him and like having that final conversation, I was like, it felt like the weight of the world was lifted off of my shoulders. And I was like, oh, I just got a second chance to like do this and not be stuck in this toxic shit for years and years and years. And I was so thankful for that. And I continue to be thankful for that. So I really resonate with the relief aspect. Was he in favor of, like, was it mutual, the divorce?
I was the one actively making choices to end it. I think if you were to ask him, and again, I won't speak entirely for him, but if you were to ask him, he would say that he did not want it and that he continues to this day to be confused as to why that's happening, which is a wild perspective from my lens. But yeah, I mean, his actions spoke that he did, even though his words said otherwise. So
yeah, I have an interesting question.
Yeah.
So I did a two-part episode with a good friend of mine named Carly Craig a couple seasons back, and she was in a relationship for 4.5 years. He was a like full-blown narcissist, like was cheating with multiple different women. One was the same woman, had gotten her pregnant multiple times. Like it was, he had a full ass double life, and like she had no idea.
And yeah, I remember listening to that one.
Shout out to Carly. We love you. She's thriving now. When Tay and I went over to have them tell us the news, we were like some of the first people they told because we were so close with both of them during the pandemic. I remember her opening the door and looking at me with like tears in her eyes. And she said, just please be kind, talking about to him. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And now looking back at it, I'm like, oh, she was at like the, I feel like when you're in deep with any type of like abusive situation or narcissistic relationship, I'm not saying that's what you were experiencing, but I feel like when there's any type of like deep manipulation and abuse like that, you go through stages as you get out. And the first stage is like that, he's not that bad of a person. I can't believe he did this, but like, please be kind. And like, let's, you know, and she was still very much so protecting him. And I've witnessed her now go through these different stages. It's like really like comparable to the stages of grief when you like are in denial and like the protection, and then you're kind of like angry about it. And then you're like, oh my God, fuck you. Do I guess my question in saying this, and this might be like a difficult question, but do you feel like you've fully left that stage?
I don't think I ever will. I don't think I ever will with any of the people that have hurt me and that have like either chosen to close or forced a closure in my life. When I love someone, it's like a love for life. And I will always see like, now I'm going to get emotional. I will always see the good, you know, like I'll always see the, like the heart of who they are, you know? And like, I really believe that that version, which is for many people who I no longer have in my life, whether it's him or many other people, it's like I know who they are, and I love that version of them. I love the core of who they are. I do not love their actions. I do not love some of their choices, but I love them. And for me, it hasn't been so much as like moving away from that, but like acknowledging that that love. And granted, like I think if this were maybe more like Carly's circumstances, it would be a different scenario. It's not though. And so it's a much more complicated, like, story, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, and again, this is true of, like, a lot of people who are no longer in my life, the love is present and the boundaries are clear, you know? And so for me, that's how I can exist and continue to move forward and have in such bright and meaningful ways and have been in partnerships since that have, like, I mean, altered my fucking chemistry, you know, and validated so much around like, yeah, you've always believed that this was the kind of love that could exist. This is the kind of love you have fought for in your entire life. And now you're witnessing it like in a reciprocal nature on all these ways. Right. And it's like, well, fuck. Yeah. Like this is the magic. And it's just like going to continue to be the magic as I continue to be in partnership with new or folks that are still in my life, you know? And so will that love always be there? Yes. And are there some seriously strong boundaries that exist in many relationships of mine past? Absolutely.
Yeah, I can understand that. The quality that you just said when you got emotional about seeing people's core and the heart of who they are, my mom possesses that, which is a huge compliment. And in the same time can be such a slippery slope because I've seen it happen.
Yes.
To people in her life that I'm like, I will fucking murder them. And she's like, well, and but this, I know
like
their
all
heart.
All my friends are. Yeah.
Yeah.
All
I get
of my
it.
Friends are like, let me fucking go. Like, I am there for you. And I'm like, I feel anger, but it is like, it moves through me really quickly. And it does. I don't know how to like armor in that way. And I used to think that was a fault, but I actually, as hard as it is, and as much hurt and pain as I exist as a result of being this way, like there's no other way I can imagine being. Mm-hmm. And it is truly like the last few years, it is something I have spent a lot of time sitting with and working on being like, no, wait, I love this part of myself because totally. I could not love the way that I do. In all of my relationships, I could not do the work that I do. I mean, I would not be me, and I fucking love who I am.
Yeah.
If this part of me, which is like this, it's been this constant through line my whole life. If this part of me wasn't there, I wouldn't be me. And like, I think I'm fucking great and really fucking magical. And like that I bring so much good to others' lives and to the world. And I believe in that like whole fucking heartedly. And also, there are definitely days where I'm like, I wish I had some goddamn Gabrielle in me. You know what I mean? Like, that was like, you know, and like, or in my world, like, you know, Laura or Caroline or whatever, you know, it's like these humans that are like these, you know, anchor people in my life that would go to fucking war for me, you know? So, yeah.
Well, for what it's worth, I think it is a beautiful quality that not many people possess. And if you can have strong boundaries in tandem with that, then I say fucking ride on. Chica,
thank you.
We talk a lot on this show about relationships being mirrors and so many people that come together like it's a purpose, like whether the relationship is successful or ends in fucking flames. It's like, what are the reasons? What are the lessons? Like, what did that person bring up in you to heal? What do you, I mean, I'm sure 10 plus years, there's so many things,
so
but like
many
if you
things.
Had to focus on one that was like, that's a fucking big one. Like what's one of the lessons that you can speak on?
Oh my gosh. I mean, one of the biggest things was like, I was a doormat when we first met. Like I was confident, but it was this like external false sense of confidence, right? Of like, I was so fucking insecure. And he saw all of me in like the most profound way. And he really encouraged me to be assertive and like to own who I was and to move through the world with so much like, no, like this is who I fucking am. And I'm not going to apologize for having big feelings or for saying the word. I mean, at the time, like it was like, or apologize for being bi and like choosing to be, you know, all of these things. Like it was just this constant, like, I'm going to support you and like hold you through this, right? With like an encouragement of like, nah, I'm watching you, like be more, be more here. And I'm like, yeah. Like, and that level of like emboldenedness, honestly, was like a big part of maybe our downfall in the end, right? Mm-hmm. Because it was like, I'm not willing to like, you know, back down from these things that I believe so deeply. And also like, for me, it has been everything to actually be able to, and I still struggle with this sometimes, like even in the last, you know, since my last book, like owning my identity as a writer has been like, and like saying that, I don't know if you've struggled with this at all, but like I was an actor for so long, an artist for so long, like I can own that. That's in my blood. But like, even like, you know, a mentor, a coach, like I've been doing that since 2015, but like writing, I was blogging and then it was like, oh, I wrote a book. And it was like, oh, wait, like, now I'm writing another one and like, oh, I guess I'm a writer. And like, I've been writing songs, you know, so it's like owning those things, like, is still like, there's this part of me, this young part of me that's still like, I'll just downplay it. But then, like,
yeah,
I remember and feel his energy and his voice that has now become mine in so many ways. Mm. Right. And that I will forever, I mean, there's so many things, but that is like, yeah, a huge, huge piece that began really early on in our relationship and was there all the way through.
Yeah. I love that. And I mentioned in the intro, I hope people go back and listen to the first episode that we did. I think it was like back in season one or two on polyamory. And because I'm sitting on Zoom across from you now, and I mean this in like a high compliment way, so I hope it comes out that way. The first time we did our interview, and even when I came on your show, there was a mask on you that was very like cute and bubbly and presented in a specific mm-hmm. way to the world. And it wasn't bad, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. now I'm looking at you and like you.
She's
you,
so queer, baby.
You physically look different. Your energy is different. Yeah. You don't have like your octave of your voice is dropped down. Like you are in your body now. Like,
oh yeah, I am so planted. It's
very different way.
Thank you for saying that. It's like, it's always so cool when people like, I haven't seen in a minute and can like witness that in me. Cause like I feel it every day. And I have obviously like people in my inner circle who are constantly like, you're just such a fucking like, yeah, you're so like in your body now. But it's fascinating to like have been here now for 2 years so consistently. And like, you're right, my voice is lower. I look back to some of my older podcast episodes. I'm like, who was that bitch? But yeah. Like, she was so, she was doing what she was doing. And when she was doing
we
it,
love
and like
her moving too. Through the,
yeah, we love her so
we
hard.
We love her too, but we welcome this star. Version.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. Going on the healing journey that you've been on recently, like what was the biggest part of your healing journey? Like what do you look back on and be like, oh, it was this that was really life-changing, or oh, it was this that I was needing and finally got.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think so much of it was like already happening in small ways, but it wasn't able to be realized because I was never going to be able to be realized with that relationship. And so like my queerness and what it has looked like from a liberation standpoint in terms of like just existing as a person in my sexuality and my gender has been so radically different since I left and like realized in a way that's just been like fully embodied instead of partially embodied in ways that like made sense or could exist in the context of that relationship. So that's been a really huge one. I also have been talking a lot about this like publicly, but you know, I've been celebrating platonic love and specifically platonic partnership in a way that I had never utilized the term like partner with my platonic people before. And in the last 2 years, one newer relationship has come into my life where like, we are partners in every sense. We are just not like having sex.
Right.
And another relationship that's been in my life for 5 years that has always felt like partners. And frankly, I felt that way in a lot of my relationships. I used to always joke with like, you know, my previous relationship, I would always say to him, like, you know, that like in the hierarchy of life, like you are below these humans, you know, it's like, I don't really believe in hierarchy generally when it comes to relationships. That's my relationship anarchist side coming, you know, to the front. But like, I mean, there have been like steadfast people in my life where of like, if what made sense for them to use partner in our relationship, like if that term had made sense at the time, like, or continue to like, I would absolutely be like, no, you're a partner of mine. And like, right. We do life together in a way that is not as you would with like a friend, you know? And so that has been a really interesting and radical approach to something that has always made so much sense to me, but then having people want to partner with me in that. And like, it's reciprocal in terms of how we show up for one another has been fucking magical. So that's been a big piece. And then also I was in a partnership, which was with a man, a straight man, which was like, I never thought I would be in a partnership with a straight man again. That was incredibly healing for me. And where a lot of trauma that had been stored in my body was like together, we really healed each other in many of those ways, and physically and sexually, and also like in terms of the ease and kindness and emotional connection and communication, and just all of these things that I have in previous relationships of many kinds felt like I had to fight in order to like have on the table. And there was no fight. It was all right. Just like, this makes so much sense. And existing in that dynamic, even though like it has de-escalated and we are now friends and like it didn't make sense for like long-term for many reasons, having had that container for almost a year was so incredibly healing for me. And yeah. So like those three things have really been the biggest things.
I'm so happy you say that, because I think so often people are like, you have to heal your shit before you can enter into a relationship. Da, 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 da.
Yeah. Fuck that noise.
Yeah. I think that's bullshit. I think there's something to be said. Like, don't like perilously go into a relationship when you know 100%. You're like all fucked up and like needing time for yourself.
Or like, be fucking transparent about what you're working on. Totally. And like let the person consent to being a part of that or not, you know?
Yeah. Let them like consent to the shit show that you are.
Right. But it's like, we're all shit shows. Like, let's be honest.
But
like,
yes. Yes. But it's so true that if like two people can come together and help each other on that healing journey, a lot of really beautiful work can be done. So I really love that you brought that up. And I think it's really important for people to know that. What's going on in your life now? Like, what's coming up? Tell me the work stuff. Like, what's going on?
Oh, yeah. Great question. This is the year that I released my first EP.
Oh my God.
So my next book I've been compiling for 3 years, and I've also been doing so alongside writing songs for the first time. Like, in 2020 was sort of how that came to be. I picked up the guitar and I was like, oh, I'm in my Joni Mitchell era, I guess. So this is where we are. And it's all sort of, I've been really nervous to put it out because it feels like the most vulnerable thing. Like, I've been sharing my life on my podcast and in my book, I Chopped Off My Tits, like on my, you know, I've been doing it on Instagram for so long. And this has been terrifying. Like, I went to like a few open mics last year to like play songs in person, not to my dog, you know, for the first time. And I was like, this feels like the most vulnerable thing I've ever done. And I'm on stage all the time as an actor. Like, so we're doing it this year. I'm putting a fundraiser together that actually I don't know when this is going out, but my birthday is February 4th. And so I'm like, for my birthday, I just like anything you can contribute to a queer artist.
I love
trying
it.
To make their dreams come true. Cause raising capital for that shit is the only way to do it. So yeah, it's going to be like a collection of poetry and essays, which is essentially already compiled. I just need to get a designer and an illustrator for the book, because it's going to be just like this beautiful thing to hold, all centering, you know, queer liberation, non-monogamy, divorce, grief, love, and all of the things it can look like. And then in tandem, have that linked to this album, because they go so hand in hand. So it's like, there will be times where I'm like, okay, and now if you want to go listen to the song, like this is where, you know, and so.
Love it. Awesome.
Yeah. So that's like my big creative project. I have a couple of shows. I start rehearsals for my next show in a few weeks that I'm really excited about. So like, we're really trucking there. And then otherwise just, you know, rocking with my one-on-one clients and my support groups and just, you know, doing the things that light me up and support the collective too in that way. So yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Can you tell people where they can come find you if they want to deep dive into all of your stuff? And
yeah,
I just think you're such like a wonderful light in this world, and you're so authentic, and you have this like beautiful vulnerability about you. And I know in your coachings and like all the work that you do, like people really get a lot out of it. So if people are wanting to come get some of that stuff, where can they come find you?
That means so much to me. So the best place is like, it's Live Your Fuck Yes Life pretty much everywhere. It's now liveyourfuckyeslife.com is like all the goods. My podcast, if you want to listen to the old stuff, is there. I haven't been making new episodes for probably 6 months. I'm like, I don't know. Will we come back? Will we not? I'm not sure. But right now it's on hiatus. And then my old Instagram since last time I was here was deactivated wrongfully by Instagram because they claimed that I did some things against community guidelines, which were absolutely incorrect, but my account was forever gone. So I've been rebuilding since July, which is, we love that. But yeah, so if you want to come over there, it's live your fuck yes life. And then if you're on the TikToks, it's just at my fuck yes life on there. I think love that's it. Everything.
We love the fucks. We love the fucks.
We do. It's always about the fucks on all fronts.
Oh, I'm sending you so much love, dude. I'm so appreciative for you coming on and sharing. There was a lot of goodness in this episode that I think people will really resonate with, an important topic, even though we danced around a few of them. I know.
I was like, I know that you always do like the like knit grit, like give me the tea episodes. And I'm like, we're not going to be able to do that.
No, but you know what? Like, it's not even on those episodes. It's never about the tea. It's about the lessons. And we got 100% a lot of the lessons from this story. So I appreciate you. And I thank you. And you are welcome back anytime.
I adore you so much.
I want to thank Amanda so much for coming on and, as always, being so vulnerable and insightful. I love having her as a guest because I feel like she really thoughtfully listens to these questions that I have and gives answers from her heart. And I'm just very appreciative of the person and the artist that she is. So please go check her out on her Instagram handles or on liveyourfuckyeslife.com. I love you guys so much. I will see you all next week. Cheers. All right, FMLers, if you don't want to miss an episode, make sure to follow on your favorite podcast app. And if you're loving the show, drop us a 5-star rating and leave a review. You can keep up with me on Instagram at Gabrielle Stone or the podcast page at FML Talk Podcast. For all the merch and books signed personally by me, you can shop the FML line on eatprayfml.com. And as always, have a fucking self-love cocktail on me. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by Podcast Nation.